Okay, good morning, everybody. Our parsha is named after Yisro, whom, after hearing the great miracles of Kriyas Yamsuf, decided to become a part of our historic nation. Interestingly, one of the first activities that Yisro does after his conversion was to offer karbanos and host a banquet for Aaron and the Shivim Zakenim, as the pasuk says in the beginning of this week's parsha, in the first aliyah, Vayikach Yisro Chosen Moshe. Yisro, the father-in-law of Moshe, takes Ola Uzvachim Lelokim. He takes a bunch of olos and zvachim, a bunch of karbanos, vayavo Aaron v'chol ziknei Yisrael, and Aaron and all the zakenim come lechol lechem, to come and join into this banquet, im chosein Moshe lefnei Elokim. They come to join Yisrael in this very elaborate banquet that he put together. So Rashi notes the very blatant omission of Yisrael's own son, Ola Moshe, from the party. How could it be that every other honorable person in Klal Yisrael was invited to this elaborate banquet, while Moshe was left out? Moshe was not invited. And Rashi famously tells us that Moshe, in fact, was invited. Of course, the father-in-law Yisro got along with Moshe. Of course, he invited him. But Moshe Rabbeinu chose to serve as the waiter for the party. And Yisro, in fact, was the host, while Moshe was serving as the waiter. Seemingly insignificant and an inconsequential detail of the story, but allow me to share the insight of Rav Soloveitchik, who sees the most significant and remarkable meaning in this superficially minor detail of the story. Rav Soloveitchik brings us back to Parshas Vayera, in which Avraham Avinu, after his bris milah, is visited by none other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, and Avraham Avinu reacts by standing up to greet his unexpected company, to which HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to him, "You, Avraham Avinu, shall remain seated, and I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will stand." This says the Ribbono Shel Olam. This is all a quote from Rashi in Parshas Vayera. This says the Ribbono Shel Olam will serve to you as a message and for future generations as well. Later on in time, there will be generations that will conduct Dine Torah, and they too shall remain seated, the Dayanim, as they arbitrate and adjudicate the case, and I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will stand in their presence. A rather strange exchange of words between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Avraham Avinu, and certainly one that needs some sort of explanation as far as the connection between Avraham Avinu sitting down and future Dayanim sitting while they paskin a din Torah. Avraham Avinu sat down because he was sick. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him he just had a bris milah, sit down. What does that have to do with Dayanim later on in future generations sitting as they adjudicate a din Torah? So Rav Soloveitchik suggests as follows. Societal norms dictate that a host normally, even as stately or distinguished and dignified as he may be, the host always stands up to greet his guest. The host instructs the guests where to hang their coats, the host tells them which room to enter and where to sit. Often the host will stand up during the meal and he'll serve some drinks or he'll go around with some hot dogs, whatever it is. The host always stands up to take care of the guests. This is precisely what Avraham Avinu meant to do as well. He was visited by the most honorable guest one can ever have, the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, and he immediately rose to his feet as any normal host would do as well. But the Ribbono Shel Olam was teaching him who the real host in this world is. We are all guests of the Ribbono Shel Olam. He is in charge, and he dictates all that happens in our world. Even when one is in the privacy of his own home, when a person thinks that he can act as if he's in charge, I'm the balabas, the Ribbono Shel Olam came to Avraham Avinu and reminded him that there's something greater out there than you. There's a larger picture, there's greater meaning to life, and there's a superior being who's gracious enough to host us on this world for our limited amount of time that we have to be here. The Ribbono Shel Olam told him as well that in future generations there would be designated judges, and obviously this is something that needed to happen because we need to have a just society. People would be singled out to ensure the safety and the justice of the environment. But all too often, we all know people in positions of power, be it a priest or a rabbi, a teacher, an elected official, a parent, or even a spouse, who feel as if they're in charge, as if they have the right to abuse their power, to exploit and manipulate, and cause irremediable damage to other people. This, said the Ribbono Shel Olam to Avraham Avinu, is what a person in any position of power has to very well understand. They're to sit, and I will stand in their presence, because it is only I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is in control of this world. It is only I that humanity is held accountable for. You are not the host. I am the host, and you are my guest. This was the lesson being transmitted to the first Jew as well, because it is from the most fundamental ones in Judaism, and it is one that needed to be taught to us from the inception of our people. And perhaps, suggests Rav Soloveitchik, this was the message that Moshe Rabbeinu wished to share with his father-in-law Yisro upon his conversion as well. Yes, Yisro, you offered karbanos, and it's wonderful, it's noble, it's virtuous, but don't you think for a minute that you are hosting this party. Moshe Rabbeinu chose to be the maitre d', to be the waiter, as an embodiment of the Shechina itself, in order to teach the new convert, the new ger, this most important lesson, that you are not in charge. As much as you think you're the balabas, as much as you're throwing the party, and you act as you're in charge, the Ribbono Shel Olam is the one who runs everything in this world. In Parshas Tetzaveh, we read of the bells that were attached to the bottom of the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. Seemingly, it's a departure from the royal dignity which characterized the rest of the Kohen Gadol's clothing. Have you ever seen a king or any sort of dignitary wear light-up sneakers so that everyone will see him approaching as he comes near us? Sounds a little strange why the Kohen Gadol would wear bells on the bottom of his clothing. So the Ramban on Chumash concludes that the reason for these bells, in fact, is because it is proper etiquette to announce oneself before entering a room. Either you knock on the door or you make some other form of noise, and these bells, says the Ramban, would ring as the Kohen Gadol entered into the Azar. In fact, if you look in the Gemara in Psachim and Daf Kuf Yud Beis Amud Beis, the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Kiva gave instructions to his son before Rabbi Kiva passed away, and he told his son Rabbi Shua, never enter your own home without knocking, and even more so the home of your neighbor. The Rashbam, on his commentary on the Gemara there, writes that this lesson was learned from the bells on the bottom of the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. So we can understand why it might not be right to barge into someone else's home unannounced, as it could startle them, it could embarrass them, they might not be dressed properly, they might be doing private things. But how could any of this apply to the Kohen Gadol entering into the Azara? Does the Ribbono Shel Olam not know to expect the Kohen Gadol's presence? Is there any concern that he will be caught off guard? So what does the Rashbam mean when he says that we equate one entering into his own home and the need to knock before one enters to this that the Kohen Gadol wears bells on the bottom of his clothing? So there's a new biography about the life of the late Rabbi Yossi Tendler, who was my principal in Eretz Yisrael. So Art School just put out a book in which I only read the first 5 pages, but on page 3 and 4 he has this beautiful insight which I would like to share. Often he writes, I mean, I'm paraphrasing and put it in my own signon, but this is basically off of his idea. Often our society seems to forgive certain behaviors on the part of the great leaders in science or politics. How can someone who's busy finding a cure for AIDS or organizing an important peace conference, how can they be expected to remember to wipe their feet before walking on my clean carpet? Many great artists and composers have been known for their short tempers and for rudeness and horrible behavior, but this, so to speak, artistic temperament has usually been accepted by us as the price for the brilliance of the artist or the brilliance of the composer. Such scientists or statesmen or artists are often treated above the usual demands of common courtesy as we know them. Unfortunately, in the Torah world as well, this can happen to us. We become so engrossed in what we consider to be the big issues out there that we lose sight of the most basic societal sensitivities that everyone should really naturally have. We think that we're so important or distinguished, or that we're involved in such important business, that we feel as if we have the right to ignore the sensitivities of all those around us. To this concern, the bells of the Kohen Gadol ring loud and clear. And here's Rabbi Tendler's idea. Here we have the holiest man who enters into the holiest place on the holiest day of the year, the triumvirate. A man who's deep in lofty thoughts, he's living in a world of his own, but he too, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, must ring the bell. He too needs to be reminded that even he, at such times and at such places, must notice the world in which he lives and be sensitive to even the most trivial needs of those who are living around him. Because he is not the one in charge of the world. He's merely a visitor in this world. He has a mission that transcends his personal pleasures and his personal desires, and he has more to work on in order to reach that objective in his life. Upon entering their own home, a spouse needs this reminder as well. And this is also Rabbi Tendler's idea. Lest one think that they have it all worked out, that they know all the answers, that they're in charge, and that they have the right to act disrespectfully to anyone in their home, be it to their spouse or to their children. They need to knock there as well to remind themselves that there is more to be done. There's a greater being out there who's the real boss, who's watching over us. This is his residence, and our relationship is far from perfect. Our mitzvahs are far from perfect. Our Talmud Torah is far from perfect. And there's so much more that the superior being in the world is asking of us. That's why a person even has to knock before entering his own home, to remind himself that he's in fact not in charge. He's just visiting here, and he has what to do, and there's what that is expected of him that's greater than what he thinks he has all worked out on his own. In the beginning of the parsha, we're told of the joy that Yisro shared over the salvation of the Jewish people upon leaving Mitzrayim. And the pasuk says that Yisro offered thanks for Moshe and Aaron being saved, and also he offered a thanks for the rest of the Jewish people who were saved as well. As the pasuk tells us, Vayomer Yisro Baruch Hashem, Asher Hitzil Aschem Miyad Mitzrayim Umiyad Paro. So he first says, I offer a thanks for Moshe and Aaron being saved from Mitzrayim. And then he says, Asher Hitzil Asa'am Mitachas Yad Mitzrayim. He offers a second offering of thanks for saving the rest of the Jewish people from Mitzrayim. So often, you know, Reb Zalman of Alojner points this out. Why is it that Yisro has two different lashonos of thanks here? Why does he first thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for saving Moshe and Aaron? And then he goes ahead and repeats, so to speak, the thanks on behalf of saving the Jewish people. Aren't they included in the Jewish people? So he gives a particular answer, which is not really for our discussion, but I want to suggest something else. So often, people in positions of power will do anything to save their own skin. Sometimes even at the expense of the people that they were working on behalf of and looking after. They forget who they're really working for, and they forget who needs to be the major factor in every decision that they make. It's not a personal club. They're there for a greater purpose, and they're working for someone who's a greater being. Yisro recognized the salvation of the Jewish people as a whole, and he was thankful for that. But a separate and a very profound sense of gratitude was offered when he saw Moshe and Aaron, two people who were placed in positions of unbelievable power, two people who did not allow themselves to become corrupt, for the politicians to be able to stay straight and focused on the goal and not fall perhaps to the other team throughout the difficult encounters of Shibud Mitzrayim. This was something that Yisro felt deserved a special mention and a particular indebtedness to the Ribbono Shel Olam for, because it's so unusual and so atypical that you have people in positions of power who remember that they're not in charge, who remember that there's a greater being out there that they have to answer to as well. This is the lesson that HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught Avraham Avinu, and it's for all future leaders as well. This is the lesson that Moshe Rabbeinu wished to transmit to Yisro, and this is what we can all learn from the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur as well. We all have this feeling in some way and at some time. We all feel a little bit arrogant, a little bit overconfident. We think that we have the right to be overly critical and sometimes even to humiliate others around us because they, quote-unquote, don't meet up to our very lofty standards that we have set for them. But this is most antithetical to our fundamental Jewish values. We need constant reminders that we are not in charge. We are not the ones to set the standards, and we're not the ones to pass judgment on other people. We have room to grow in our spousal relationships, and we don't always have everything worked out. That's why we knock on our own doors before we enter as well, to remind ourselves that we are not the balabas. We don't always have everything worked out. Let's use this week to think about something, some area that we can work on, areas in which we feel we have some room to grow, some room to develop, and most importantly, let's always remember that there's a greater purpose in all that we do, one which needs to dictate each and every decision that we might make in our own lives. I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos.